seconds at the beginning, just audio sync up stuff. So,
all right.
Well, all right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Space Tomatoes podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Havoc.
I'm Alex. Hello.
And today we have a guest joining us, Duncan Carey Palmer, here to talk, stuff, Bitcoin, Noster, life, gardening, maybe not gardening, maybe terrible gardening. We don't know. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Glad to have you.
So I do have to ask, where did you, does the pixel filter, is that just part of your camera setup, or where did you come up with that?
Well, that's intentional. Because of my checkered past, I represent myself to the world sort of pseudonymously. So Duncan Carey Palmer is actually my pen name, my nom de plume. And I have, shall we say, less than satisfactory relationships with certain three-letter agencies and state actors, where we don't necessarily see things eye to eye. Mostly for the sake of not embarrassing my wife, I keep my public identity and my private identities more or less separate.
Maybe we should have done that all along.
Probably.
You guys look great. and you can probably tell even through the pixelation that I'm a member of the club. These whiskers have been there. Have you seen my Noster icon or, you know, image?
Yeah.
The wizard. Yeah. That's pretty much me in real life and reality, I guess you could say.
All right.
I haven't made the jump to Noster yet, so I have not seen it.
Oh, how well. So maybe, hopefully I can help drag you there, man. It's awesome.
Well, we were. I have all intentions of going there, but I just haven't done it quite yet.
Yeah, it's my daily driver for social media, and it's basically, I mean, I gave up listening to mainstream baloney news a long time ago, but Noster is essentially where I get my information about life, the universe, and everything these days.
So, 42. Noster is 42. So, yeah, I mean, we were going to get LX set up on Noster while we were down in Tampa because he lives in the area.
Oh.
And unfortunately, it was kind of a... I'm not a very good planner. I'm more of a spontaneity came over here.
My kind of guy.
Especially when I'm... Especially when I'm on vacation, they're like, well, what are we going to do today? I'm like, I don't know, whatever happens, I guess. And they're like, no, we have to have a plan. Not LX. Well, okay, maybe LX too, but pretty much everyone wants that, I guess. And I'm like, I'd like to not plan and just, like, my day is planned, right? On a normal basis, when I'm on vacation, I kind of want to just, I don't know, get a wild hair and let's go do this.
I have that same tension with my wife. She's the planner and I'm the surfer. So I'm the surfer dude.
Yeah.
Literally.
We'll get him set up. Well, I like that. I like that. I've spent many a year doing exactly that. All the way from no fees all the way up to, well, I guess I didn't go much past, I'm trying to think. So, yeah, I guess not much past, I don't know. So, Salt Creek. Missed the days of Doheny. So, I was...
Okay, so you were a Left Coast guy for a while?
I was, yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
I miss the tacos. I'm not kidding you.
It's all about the tacos. It's always about the tacos.
You got to get the street variety, you know, like they make in TJ.
Oh, yeah. Yep, yep. Street tacos are amazing. Yeah, no, I'm really big on, yeah, I'm terrible with that. Like, we found a taco place when we were down there, but really good one, actually. I was pretty amazed. It's hard to find, at least around us, a really good taco place. or Mexican restaurant, I should say. But we found a place and went to go order tacos, and I'm like, I ordered all the tacos. I want all the tacos.
I'll take one of each.
Yeah, four bags full of just tacos. It was crazy.
That's kind of how it went. Tacos for days.
Yep. I love tacos. You gotta be.
I can tell. I mean,
who doesn't? Have you ever met anyone that's like, nah, I don't like tacos? No, come on. You don't like tacos?
You know I don't like tacos.
My wife makes.
They're all you, man.
Super tacos. Basically, we just chop up all the vegetables, and you know, it's like a Mexican street taco. Only you just keep piling it on. I call it the PhD style. Pile it higher and deeper.
There you go. Yep. BS bullshit. MS more shit. PhD piled higher and deeper.
Is there like a taco app or a forum or something on a Nosser that you could join, or maybe you need to start?
There's definitely foodies there. And, you know, a lot of people that are into food and publish recipes and show what they're working on and making. And there's people that sell various things like, jerky, various concoctions and so on for Bitcoin. And that, to me, that's one of the beauties of Nostr and Bitcoin, is that we have really a worldwide free and open peer-to-peer market now with Nostr and Bitcoin. It's amazing. And it's unstoppable, you know, unless they decide to shut down the internet permanently, at which point, hopefully we'll have something like Reticulum to replace it.
Yeah, or Meshtastic or whatever, you know?
Well, so Reticulum. So yeah, I've been experimenting with Meshtastic. So my buddy and I, a couple of years ago, started a Bitcoin meetup in the local area here in Southern California. And one of the things I did early on was pulled together some Meshtastic nodes and set it up. So I took a walk around the block, just running a portable node, and left a node with the meetup, and was just communicating in text as I walked around the block, and sent a mock transaction, but to show that you could transfer Bitcoin using Cashew,
mm-hmm. Yep.
over any text channel. No, it's really cool stuff going on. But so that was just a lead in that I've since then have found out that Reticulum is, I think, either Reticulum or something like it is what I think will ultimately replace the entire internet. I believe at the IP level, the internet protocol level, replace IP with totally encrypted identities and the ability to communicate with anybody anywhere in the world unstoppably.
That sounds like the original intent.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I have no idea what any of that stuff is, so I'm just gonna nod my head and say, okay.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean,
sounds good to
ask
me.
Ask question. Here's the thing, you know, right now the internet is kind of a bunch of centralized things. It became that, you know, as big actors like Google and others got in, Facebook, And all this was by design, what I think of as from the dark side, what I call the powers that shouldn't be, kind of got their fingers into the mess and said, all right, we're gonna own these people out there, and we're gonna surveil their every move and follow them wherever they are. And so we'll make it a requirement to sign up everywhere and to provide, you know, your license and registration, KYC, know your customer, okay, which they blatantly lie about. They say it's to protect us from all these evil people, but what it really is for is to keep tabs on every move that everybody makes and every transaction and get a piece of that action right out of the middle. And Nostr and Bitcoin are huge steps away from that to free us. And I'm profoundly and eternally grateful to the technical people out there that are building the tools that can protect us from the power, what I call powers that shouldn't be, PTSB.
Yeah. No, and the whole, you know, the concept in Nostr is pretty cool because, you know, like at this point I'm running a relay. So got my own little space, my space. Yeah. It's someone else's server. So, but I can move it if I need to, you know what I mean? I can put it on home system. I could do whatever I want with it and then use, you know, pretty much any app I want, even down to just command line. If I want to just do command line, you know, a little messy, but you know, you got things like, what is the one, Grimoire, where you can run command lines, but it's got kind of, you know, a shell for you and you can,
what was the name of that?
Your pieces. Grimoire.
Spell?
Grimoire.
Thanks. I'm going to look that one up. Cool.
Yeah. So being able to, you know, interact in a way that fits your style is really cool to me. Right. It's what got me on Android, you know, early on out of the gate was the ability to customize my own stuff, you know?
Right.
Which I enjoy, you know, and again, I have no skin in the game on which one's better for whatever reason or anything like that. I don't like locked in ecosystems. That to me has always been something I'm not a big fan of, but there's huge benefit that comes along with it, right? I mean, there's no doubt about the fact that when you control the OS and the apps and the hardware, you're going to have a better experience because it's all purpose built, right? So, but you know, having that ability to customize in a way that you want, and Nostr kind of gives you that, like, I don't like this app. Okay, we'll get a different app. And there's so many of them. So it's not like, oh, I've got this Facebook app. I really don't like this. It's clunky. It's weird. It's terrible. Too bad. Just what you've got, right? Nostr is like, well, if you don't like any of them, just make your own.
Exactly. And the beauty, additional beauty of that is your identity and your data is portable from app to app to app. You don't have to sign up, you know, everywhere. There's scare quotes. You don't have to sign up for every freaking place that you want to use or every app or whatever. You've got your private key, your NSEC, your secret key, and your NPUB is your face to the world. And additionally, you can have different identities for different things that you do. You can, you can have one identity that you are the writer at, and you become well known and you're that person, but then you can have a separate identity where you might say, let's go use financial apps here, or let's do our transacting on this separate identity. And you can, you know, between or among those identities, you can vouch for an alternate identity, you know, if you want to, or you can keep them totally separate where nobody knows that they're connected at all. It's, Noster has made that possible. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it really takes, to be honest with you, it takes a while to, at least it has for me. I can't speak for everyone, but it's taken me a while to get my brain out of that mode of, you know, where's the content? You know, when you first join Noster, it's kind of a dead zone, feels like. All you really get is just a bunch of Bitcoin and developers. That's all, pretty much. And you're like, I don't know, is this the right place for me? But you have to like retrain your brain, right? You're not being spoon-fed anything. What's there is just what's there. That's it. It's not going to be reshuffled or rejiggered for your personal consumption. That's on you to do, right? So you find the people you want to follow. You find the topics that are interesting to you. You follow these people and you start to build up basically that feed, right?
Are the algorithm. There is no built-in algorithm. Well, unless, you know, again, depending on the app you're using, there may be an algorithm. So, for example, I have some concerns about certain actors out there like Albie, actors like Primal. They make, in some sense, they make things easier and more comfortable. And, you know, Primal, for example, might be an excellent way to dip your toe into the Noster and Bitcoin waters, because it makes it easy to onboard, gives you a wallet right away, and you can just be up and running in no time. However, I think they filter what you see, and they do have algorithms. But once you're there and you start to understand what Noster is, then you can branch out and start using other things. And I see the same future potential for Reticulum in particular. There's something else that showed up on Noster recently. I can't remember, but you know, there are, and again, I will repeat, I'm profoundly grateful to the small army of developers out there that are working on the code and on the projects to help liberate us from the powers that shouldn't be. There are other things that will ultimately enable us to use the internet and stay in touch with each other and have a truly free worldwide market, and not worry about the internet being shut down or whatever.
Yeah, and Noster really does also, like you've mentioned, the you know, kind of marketplaces that are available. And it really kind of changes the perception, at least I would imagine it does for a lot of people, and it did for me quite a bit in what Bitcoin really is, right? I think a lot of people just look at it as an investment, right? Like you can just put money in there and just wait, and eventually you probably have more available, whatever, fiat money, right? But what's missing there is, I think one of the original intentions was, this is money. It's to be used as money, not just accumulate, hold, and accumulate more and hold and accumulate more and hold. Because right. That doesn't change the paradigm at all. You're still stuck in fiat land, right? You're just taking your fiat and putting it somewhere. Might as well be gold, silver, any other thing, you know? But you get into Noster, and next thing you know, you're like, yeah, well, look, this product looks good. I'd like to try that. And boom, you're like, hey, here, have some sats. And next thing you know, you've got a product and you're like, hey, this is really good. And it's, you know, at least so far for me, it's all quality, handcrafted, you know, real goods. It's not, you know, some trash from, you know, wherever that's going to, you know, make you sad.
It's not wherever, it's China. You know, it's from China. All the junk comes from China.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much.
So, Havoc, I'm glad you brought that up. I guess that's probably what I'm here for, is to talk somewhat about Bitcoin. And so I mentioned my checkered past, and, you know, speaking of checkers, you can see the pixelated checkers on my face here. So the disagreements I've had with these powers that shouldn't be, I'm sort of an early adopter of a lot of things because I found out the hard way. Well, okay, let me back up a little bit. Can I get into a little autobiography?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I grew up in the United States of America. I was telling Havoc earlier before we started recording that I was born on a farm or near a farm in Michigan, a berry farm. One of these days I hope to visit Havoc's farm because I've missed that segment in the rest of my adult life. In any case, I grew up in America. I went to public schools. I grew up in a time, you know, in the 1950s when there was substantially more real shirt sleeve freedom in the country, and there was less oppression. I was told America was the greatest nation in the world, and, you know, all of the standard things that you learn. But as I've grown older and married and raised kids and grandkids and so on, I've found that it's not quite all the textbook, rainbows and unicorns that I was taught growing up. So fast forward a bit to some point where I had some disagreements with, different perspective or viewpoint from one of the three-letter agencies. And, you know, after that, one day I went to my bank and was going to take some money out of an ATM, and there's this zero balance. And I'm going, what the heck is going on here? Well, the infernal, the IRS had sent a fax to my bank. Well, back up once. Have you heard of due process of law? You know, theoretically, you're innocent until proven guilty. All of that stuff. And the IRS sent my bank a fax and said, send us all his money. And the bank says, okay, there you go. Absolutely zero due process of law whatsoever in this country. It's all a matter of power, raw power. You know, whoever's running the show, they pull the strings on the puppets. And we individual folks out here, we have absolutely zero protection. And that's where Bitcoin came from, I believe, was a matter of getting money out of the hands of the state, because the state inserts and insinuates itself into every transaction, every move, and Bitcoin absolutely eliminates that middleman. So I could send, if we exchange NPUBs, I could send Havoc money right today, even, you know, while we're talking here. I could send him real money, Bitcoin, that the state, even though they're bombing Iran and, you know, they've got huge navies and so on, they don't have the power to stop transactions in Bitcoin. Well, they could, you know, if they wanted to come find me personally, they could stop me. But, you know, there's tens of thousands of Bitcoin nodes out there running. I'm running a node. Havoc, I was delighted to hear you're actually ahead of me in the Noster world running a relay. That's awesome, dude. But I'm running a Bitcoin node, so I can, I'm helping to support the Bitcoin network individually, and we can exchange money around the world between Noster and Bitcoin users, and no nation state can stop it. You know, how cool is that?
No, it really is, right? And again, it goes back to that, you know, that whole thing, right? It's I don't think the original intent was, you know, to create a system that would, you know, not that it's not there, and it can, you can certainly do this, but it was, I don't think the original intent was to just, you know, stack, right? I think the intent was use this as money and get away from that, right?
Exactly.
You know, so.
Of course, the beauty of it, game theory, is that the desire to have your wealth grow, or at least, at the very least, be protected, is the carrot. You know, it's the honeypot that sucks people in when they understand that. And especially when people discover what I discovered very painfully, you know, like 20, 30 years ago, that the powers that shouldn't be can just say, give us his money, and boom, it's gone. You know, everything you sweated and worked for and thought you were saving, when it's in the hands of a third party, it's called counterparty risk. When your funds, when your savings, when your wealth is in anybody else's hands, it's not yours. And that's the beauty of Bitcoin, is that you own it and it is protected. I think back to, you know, one of my friends who is now a Bitcoiner came to his realization when he saw during COVID, the truckers up in Canada went on a big trip across the country, and people had donated to support that protest up there, donated like $1 million, and Trudeau says, we're going to take that away, and boom, it was gone. So they realized, and my friend in this case watching the news realized, hey, you know, my money in the bank isn't safe. I better get me some Bitcoin. It's more secure than gold. You know, gold, physical silver, those are great. But, you know, basically you have to warehouse them somewhere. You have to put them in a safe or protect them. Bitcoin is a number. You can keep your Bitcoin in your head. If you can remember 12 words, you know, what the worst they can do is kill you, but they can't get your Bitcoin. So
yep,
it's like giving the middle finger to the powers that shouldn't be.
Yeah. And, you know, especially if you go to, you know, the big piece there, I would say, is self-custody. Right.
Yes.
Which is the act of taking the Bitcoin that you do own and moving it away from an exchange.
Absolutely.
Exchanges are how you get Bitcoin from fiat, fiat being the dollar. Well,
we can talk about that. You don't want to do that. You want to get Bitcoin from another individual.
Peer to peer.
Because the exchanges are going to, you know, they tie you into, again, to the powers that shouldn't be. When you buy Bitcoin from an exchange, they know, the powers that shouldn't be, the PTSB, know who has it and how much and all of those details. So buy your Bitcoin from another Bitcoiner.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess my only caveat to that would be, especially for a lot of our listeners, they are completely clueless on what it even is, right? And so I would rather have someone go and start off on an exchange and then move to self-custody and throw some into a Lightning network and then toss it back into a different self-custodial wallet. And now you're in fairly good shape, right? But, you know, peer-to-peer is something that is, I mean, it's wonderful. It's great. You can do it as long as you know people and you trust them and, you know, all those things exist. But if you're new to it, there's no really easy on-ramp for going peer-to-peer right out of the gate.
Havoc, can I throw out a counter to that with
with tell all me due I'm respect stupid and you're making a big mistake
no you're not at all
and I'm good no, with I, it.
Not at all. I understand your perspective, but here's my alternative recommendation, and it's a strong one because, well, all right, so I would say that your path that you just described would be fine for a start, you know, get $10, get $100, you know, whatever from an exchange if you want to. But, and that way, you know, you can dip your toe into the water and you can maybe have a plausible deniability, a separate stack of Bitcoin that's your public stack, and it's pretty small, and that might even be a good decoy for the powers that shouldn't be. But when you really want to start stacking, and even right from the beginning, find a Bitcoin meetup in your local area and go and hang out with Bitcoiners, you know, people that are there and that are doing it, where you can ask questions face to face, you know, like we're sitting here. It's almost like we're together in a room here. That's one of the cool things about the internet is we can have these conversations. But go and talk to some real Bitcoiners, or even just go on, you know, sign up for Primal or whatever and get your initial Bitcoin in Lightning and get a wallet. There are wallets out there. Trying to remember. I think Moon Wallet, M-U-U-N Wallet, lets you save things either as Lightning or as on chain. You can learn these things and be completely self-sovereign. Be, you know, have your stack of Bitcoin totally private from those powers that, you know, will come knocking at your door. And they do, by the way. They come, they sneak up on your house and, you know, they make a big show. Speaking from experience here, you know, that three-letter agency I mentioned at one point could have sent me a letter, but they chose instead to descend on my house with like a dozen or more armed agents from local, state, and federal powers, and, you know, just basically to show my neighbors what a bad guy I am and all of that good stuff. So you don't want that, is my point. So you want to keep your privacy.
Yeah, I don't think anyone wants that.
Here's a silly question. Sure. So at those meetups and things, what incentivizes somebody to sell their Bitcoin instead of just stacking it for themselves?
Not a silly question at all. That's a fantastic question. I have an article about that. The title is Why I Sell My Bitcoin. Okay, so I've been in Bitcoin since before Bitcoin began. And you'd think that would make me a wealthy man. Well, I'm absolutely not, because the way God wired my brain, I see the world from about 80,000 feet. You know, I see the big picture. And one of my huge errors back in the beginning, I followed the development of Bitcoin. There was various attempts to use gold to back internet money, and there were various organizations that basically the effort of trying to protect ourselves from the state. So I watched Bitcoin come along, and I did get involved fairly early, but I made the mistake that I'm trying to encourage Havoc not to encourage, or, you know, at least to change the way he presents it. Don't deal with those exchanges or minimize your exposure on an exchange, because I originally bought Bitcoin on the first Bitcoin exchange called Mt. Gox, MTGOX. And I did not understand what has become a mantra in Bitcoin, for good reason. The mantra is not your keys, not your coins. Not your keys, not your coins. Pound that into your head. Don't ever forget it. Because, you know, I would have retired a decade ago or more if I had understood that from the beginning. But as I said, I see the world from 80,000 feet. So I missed that point. And I thought I was, you know, doing okay until the day the news came across, oh, you can't take your money out. You can't get your Bitcoin out of that exchange. It's been hacked, or, you know, some bad machinations went on. And so I lost the vast majority of that. And I learned my lesson the hard way. I've got the arrows in my back to prove I'm a pioneer. So you want to have your Bitcoin in your own self-custody, in your own private set of keys, and offline and stored. So back to your question, LX. Is that how I address you, LX? Or?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, okay. Right. So back to your question, why would anybody sell their Bitcoin? Well, I very painfully, at much greater expense, managed to stack a much smaller collection of Bitcoin after I understood that life lesson, and waited and waited and just, you know, kept working and doing, plying my trade and earning filthy fiat dollars until Bitcoin did appreciate to the point where I have been able, thank God, to retire on it. So as a retiree, I need filthy fiat from time to time to pay bills and buy groceries and so on. And that's why, excuse me, at as slow a rate as I can manage, I sell my Bitcoin. And I used to deal with an exchange on foreign shores that I won't mention on this show, but since the local community has been built up and there are more and more private individuals locally that understand the value of Bitcoin, I now do all of those exchanges privately. You know, I just let it be known to the local group, hey, I have a little bit of coin available for sale. But I'll tell you, I'm really low, you know, it's as slow as I possibly can, because even though Bitcoin value is like a roller coaster, if you integrate it all out, it's going up forever, Laura, as Michael Saylor says. So I know that the $100 of fiat that I get today for a little bit of Bitcoin, if I could only wait a few years, that's going to be $1,000 or $10,000, or, you know, it's going to be part of my kids and grandkids' inheritance. So I trickle it out, but that's why I sell it, to, you know, pay the bills. And that gradually, as Bitcoin becomes more and more adopted in the world, I'll have to do less and less of that. There are things that I do. And by the way, we encourage the people that come to our meetups to use Bitcoin as money, because that's part of the purpose is, you know, when you use Bitcoin as money, for example, we have a meetup locally where we meet at a restaurant that accepts Bitcoin. So, you know, when I spend Bitcoin, at least at the very theoretical level, there's no middleman. The state can't take sales tax out in the middle. There's potentially no paper trail. Well, there. Okay, let me back up a little bit. Again, it's the idea of being pseudonymous. You know, if the Bitcoin that you control is not connected to your personal real world identity, then the state can't lay claim to it. They can't haul you into court. They can't rob from you. So it's real money. It's like universal barter system. You know, it's like going down to the flea market, and you know, you meet on a corner somewhere, you see a vendor on a street corner, and you go buy a hot dog or whatever, you know, you hand them a couple bucks or five a fin inflation. And nobody knows but you and him. And what Bitcoin and Nostr give us the ability to do is have that experience globally and cut the thieving middleman state completely out of the picture. And we're living that dream right now. And that's why I'm encouraging you. The alternate view, Havoc, is to get people into that world where you're self-custodying your Bitcoin, you're using it for transactions locally and globally, and reducing the power of the state to oppress us and destroy us.
Yeah, and the not your keys, not your coin. you can think of that for those just real easy way to think of this, right? If you go and, you know, you get your check or whatever it is for your job, if you go to the bank, cash that out and just take cash home, right? This is self-custody. This is, you have your keys, you have your coin. If you leave it in the bank and you use that little card, those little numbers that are digitally printed on a screen can be changed, altered, or just removed by request. Not your keys, not your coin. You didn't have physical, you know, physical dollars in your hand. They can be, you know, removed from your access. You just, like Duncan was saying, it's a $0 balance all of a sudden. Well, what happened? Well, they just said, yeah, give us the money. Okay, well, we gave them the money. So you don't have any money, right? But if you had the cash, they couldn't do that. It's the same exact thing, right?
And then once you have Bitcoin is cash. That's a great analogy. Bitcoin is cash, but it's cash, right? It's cash that, so even with cash, here's a slight difference I want to point out for your listeners, and that is that green stuff, folding stuff in your wallet, you know, you have it sitting there in your wallet, and while you're sleeping and while you're going about your business, the state is still stealing that cash from you because they're printing more of it and diluting the value of it. And anybody that's lived through the last 5 years has seen the price of a hamburger double or more. You know, what at the beginning of COVID, I think it's something like they printed like 40% of all the dollars that exist in the universe.
Yep.
And a bunch of thieving, evil people. And, absolutely. And that's part of
inflation.
Part of
is,
what
inflation is yeah. built into our system. It's part of our system. It's there purposefully in our system. And it's also
yep.
the thing that will continue to devalue your currency ad nauseum. It just won't ever stop because the system is built right. upon infinite growth, which, okay, you know, so the only way to maintain that infinite growth is to increase the supply of the thing that is used to transact, or dollars, which of course devalues the currency, but we need more yep. growth. So we print more, which devalues the currency. You know, eventually we'll have $1 trillion notes. It's just a matter of time, you know. Zimbabwe has them, so.
Well, have you seen the photos of the street sides down in Venezuela? The whole, you know, along the sides of the road, there's just money lying on the side of the road. They're dollars, and it's going to be that way in the U.S. of A. before we know it. It's the paper money is going to be worthless.
Yeah. Yeah, it's getting there. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So here's another question.
Sure.
In the past, I've done a lot of wheeling and dealing on places like Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace, you know, not, you know, for currency, obviously, but there are a lot of scams and people trying to take your money from you.
Yes.
And I've seen stories, you know, people sending the money and never receiving the goods, which is yes. breaking rule number one. How does one not get ripped off when they're buying from an individual if they don't personally know them?
That is a great question. And that, you know, that is a problem. And the way the fiat world, of course, has solved that is with your credit card companies. You know, if you're using a credit card, and you encounter that kind of thing, there's some recourse. But in the global peer-to-peer exchange world, your best protection in that area is reputation. And so, and essentially, at the moment, that's your only protection. There are There are some existing escrow type arrangements where, for a small fee, a company will get in the middle of a transaction, and you will put your payment to the. Let's say you've got a vendor selling beef jerky or whatever, and you know you're a little unsure about their reputation, but they have this intermediary service. You put your, and you've used this service before, you know, let's say it's become big enough and it has a great reputation. You put some of your Bitcoin into the hands of this middleman, this escrow company, and you wait till the goods are sent to you. And when you receive the goods, you tell the escrow company, I got them, and then they release the funds to the vendor. But really, the best remedy, I think, is reputation. So there are people on Nostr, for example, that I would, if I wanted what they're selling, I would happily just pop them some Bitcoin and not really worry about it, because, you know, unless they were going to do what's called a rug pull, you know, let's say they finally decided, you know, we're going to go down to a tropical island or whatever. And they, but for us, okay. So I'm also an entrepreneur. And one of my principles has always been that the customer is always right, even if they're wrong. But typically, if you're, let's look at it from the seller end for a minute. If somebody orders something, I'm typically not dealing with a big company where I'm sending a huge volume of product. I'm dealing with individuals. So if I send out something that, you know, costs me $50 to make and the retail price is $200 or whatever, I haven't lost my shirt. You know, if the customer doesn't pay or if something happens, I remember one, let me rewind just a bit and tell you what I invented. The way God wired my brain, I'm an inventor. So I invented this machine that makes colloidal silver. Do you know what colloidal silver is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, most powerful natural antibiotic. But if you don't make it right, you know, it can be not harmful, but you could slightly turn blue, or you could, you know, have certain side effects that aren't 100% desirable. I learned how to make it.
He was making the rounds on the media years ago and called him like Papa Smurf or something. And he was almost completely blue.
Yeah. And that the powers that shouldn't be use those poster boys, if you will, to scare people away from the best antibiotic in existence. There's another, they have a new one now. There was some woo-woo, some lady guru that died not too long ago. And now the powers are lying and saying that colloidal silver killed her. Utter BS. It's total BS, but there's the problem is there's no real money. You know, the pharmaceutical companies, they love to pump their antibiotics, which have evil side effects. One of our success stories, I guess you'd say, with colloidal silver is that there was this guy, the doctor came and you know, he's in the hospital. The doctor said, you know, Mr. So-and-so, your heart is failing and, you know, our antibiotics. He had have you heard of MRSA superbugs?
I have, yes.
Yeah, he had a superbug infection on one of his heart valves. And the doctor said, you might as well go home, be with your family, you know, because you're not going to live. It was around Thanksgiving. He said, you probably won't be around by Christmas, the doctor told the guy. So he went home. His some relative had bought one of our machines, and she started giving him colloidal silver. Hospice had already come out. You know, the guy was expecting to die. The whole family was expecting this. But this lady who had our machine gave him colloidal silver every day. And he was starting to feel better a week later. After 10 days, hospice finally left because he was up and out of bed and, you know, fixing his own sandwiches and stuff. And as far as I know, he's still alive and going, whereas the regular medical establishment had given up on him.
Wow.
The colloidal silver, and that's just one of, you know, and I'm just a really small operation. You know, we sell a few machines here and there, but it's something that it's criminal that it's not, that colloidal silver isn't in use in every hospital in the world.
So what does the machine extract it somehow? And what do you, I thought it was a tincture maybe that you use.
So
I'm not really
what colloidal
sure.
silver literally is pure silver ions in distilled water. And what the machine does is it diffuses the ions at about 10 parts per million into distilled water. And then you can consume it. You can apply it topically, however you want to use it.
Okay.
So anyway.
Is that effective in autoimmune diseases at
all? Absolutely. Absolutely. It's universally safe and effective, but of course the powers, you know, they use, like you said, the blue man and this other lady who you know, new age type guru who died, the powers lie about, you know, what happened to them. But if real colloidal silver, the kind our machines make, and you know, if you use it appropriately, is the best antibiotic going. But I forget my train of thought. Oh, okay. Help me back to my train of thought, because it went woo, woo, woo. It went steaming off into the distance.
I completely lost it, as well as my cookies. So I don't know what happened.
Well, it was
there.
Connected to Bitcoin, I guess, somehow.
Yeah, I think it was. I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened. I must have eaten something bad, where it's just me being on vacation for 6 days and eating not like I normally do.
I feel your pain there.
Have you recovered? Are you doing all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. I don't know what happened. I just got a little clammy and weird, and I was like, this isn't good. And so I just apparently had to go expel some material that didn't want to be there anymore.
Well, the clammy part's abnormal, the weird part.
Oh, I know. Okay, so I remember the thread. LX had asked how you can, you know, trust who you're dealing with.
Right, right, right.
It is a matter of trust, and you just have to go by reputation or some intermediary escrow company. So those are the two answers. But I prefer the trust part, you know, and that's what I was getting at is, so as a vendor, on the vendor side of things, you know, not the consumer. So let's say that you decide to trust me, but you're so LX, and I'm not painting you this way at all, but if you were a bad actor and you said, okay, send me one of these silver engines, colloidal silver makers, and I sent it to you expecting you to pay me, and somehow you screwed me out of that payment. What have I lost? You know, I've lost the manufacturing cost. You know, it's like dealing with one individual there. It's not really not a huge deal. I just, you know, don't expect me to deal with you again. that kind of thing. But, you know, from the consumer side, yeah, you just have to have a trust relationship or good reputation on the vendor side.
And you can see, like, you know, you can kind of tell, at least, you know, on Nostr, when you can just look and people, you know, are either raving about it, and, you know, there's a high degree of trust that you see there, or there's not. And if there's not, well, okay, you know, buyer beware, right?
Right.
How about buying the Bitcoin from an individual? I mean, what if I sent Havoc $100 and said, you know, I want some Bitcoin, and he just ghosts me and disappears?
That's another great question. Okay, so your best deal is face to face.
Why do I gotta be the bad guy here? Why? How did I? You're the bad actor.
I was
you're
using you.
It was your turn.
It
was your turn, Havoc. I painted LX as the bad guy a minute ago.
All right.
Anyway,
I'll be the bad guy.
Long pregnant pause. You'll have to edit out.
Nah,
what was the question?
It's all right.
Oh, okay.
If I send Havoc money, how do I get my Bitcoin out of him?
So there are a number of websites out there that actually facilitate Bitcoin exchanges peer-to-peer with an escrow mechanism in the middle. And I have a personal friend who has sent big wads of cash through the mail a number of times to do that. But, you know, the preferred way is get to know the local Bitcoin community and find out, you know, like, find out who's retired on Bitcoin or whatever, you know, and who has a little bit for sale, and do it in a public place, you know, a safe place, face to face, where you can see every detail of that transaction going down, and yet it's private. It's just totally peer to peer. So that's the preferred way to do it. But as I said, there are a number of online sites that facilitate peer-to-peer exchanges even remotely. So,
yeah, I mean, Bitcoin Meetup would be a great place to do that. You'll likely find some
Bitcoin meetups, absolutely.
People that will want to transact like that. And then you're literally standing there with the dude transacting, right? They lay the cash out, you count the cash, you see it, it's sitting right in front of you. Then you do the transfer. They go, yep, I got the transfer. Everybody walks away happy.
Yep.
And you're only paying gas at that point, right? Or the transaction fee between the things. So you're not paying, you know, some exorbitant wire fee or anything else, right? Like if I want to wire you $50, it's going to cost me like $15 to $30 just to send you $50.
Exactly. And Havoc, you've just reminded me, going back to something you were talking about before, probably most, if not all of your listeners have experienced glitches in the existing financial system. For example, have either of you ever had a credit card or debit card transaction declined for whatever reason?
Sure.
Okay. So if, you know, and people deal with that and they go, okay, that's just the way the world works, you know, that's just the way it is, and they pull out a different credit card or whatever and or go and figure out, oh, you know, somebody tried to fraudulently use my card, so now it's got a glitch or whatever, you know, it's not working. But if I'd like your listeners to stop and think about that as an example of the fact that whenever you're doing that, whenever you're using a credit card, whenever you're using a debit card, whenever you're dealing with a bank, you are dealing with an intermediary that has complete power and control over your, what you think of as your money. It's not your money. It's not your money. It's only at their pleasure. You know, and because the banks and the state are in bed together, as the world moves more and more towards a social credit system, you know, if you've pissed somebody off in an office on the Potomac somewhere, or in Sacramento, or wherever your center of power is, and they decide they don't like you for whatever reason, they can shut off every one of your freaking credit and debit cards,
yep,
you know, with a phone call or a fax. So that's why you want to run, don't walk, you know, run to your nearest Bitcoin meetup, get on board with Bitcoin, learn how to use Nostr, learn how to use these tools that that this small army of wonderful people have been developing, and learn how to be in control of your own money.
Sound advice. And probably a great place to kind of start wrapping things up, I think. Do you have any additional questions, Alex?
No, I think that kind of covers it.
All right. Well, one question we like to ask all of our guests is, throughout our lives, there are people that make an impact, whether that's someone that, you know, you read their works, or, you know, philosopher, it could be, you know, mom, dad, science teacher, whatever it is. But the, you know, someone at some point has made a profound impact on your life. And we like to give people the opportunity to give a shout out to those influential people. So here's your opportunity. Shout it out.
Well, Thank you. I've been wrestling with that. It's because there's a fairly long laundry list. Can I shout out for a couple or three?
Sure. We'll go ahead and give you that. We usually like to make it the one.
Thanks.
Person.
I haven't watched enough of your podcast to know what your protocol is. But, of course, number one top of the list is, I believe that the man most widely known as Jesus Christ, unfortunately, Christ is a Greek word, which most people, unfortunately, most people think that's his last name. It's not. It means he's the anointed one. He is the king of the universe. He's a prophet, a priest, and a king. And literally, in the book of John, we read that he is actually our creator God, who became a man so that he could convey to us who he is and how much he actually cares about us and so on. So shout out to my king, Jesus, which makes, you've heard the term Antichrist. Antichrist, there's another interesting term. It's a false king. So every freaking politician that claims they have a right to run my life is an Antichrist. I only look to and have allegiance to King Jesus. He's the one that. The amazing thing is that he's the only ruler who truly has our best interests at heart for every one of us. So, highly recommend that all your listeners get to know him. So now, since you've been gracious, I'll also mention that I appreciate the writings of Robert Heinlein. He's a sci-fi author. The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. I'd recommend that book. He's very libertarian. He's helped me think about freedom and so on. And my grandmother, who taught me about Jesus from infancy. So there's a few for you. Thank you for
that's awesome.
Letting me add on.
That's awesome.
Okay.
All right. And then I don't know if you have, but if you'd like to, where can people find you? What are you working on?
Yeah. Wow. All kinds of stuff. I am a prolific writer. I write about everything. I write about bad Bible translations that have confused people. Terribly bad English translations. I am working on a spaceship design. Take me and my granddaughter to the moon in about 5 hours. What else is going on? So, I have to ask you, can you put a link or something in footnotes to the podcast?
Absolutely.
Is that a possibility?
Absolutely.
All right. So I'll send you a couple of links to where people can find my writing. And as far as contacting me, I guess I can probably supply an email address that should be generally available, but be happy to communicate, encourage anybody in terms of Bitcoin or the Bible. I study it in Greek and a little bit in Hebrew. I'm dangerous in Hebrew, but I write poetry, music. I wound up at the Bitcoin conference in Nashville a couple years ago because I wrote a song praising the virtues of Bitcoin and Satoshi and, all of these foundational people that are helping to free us from the nation states of the world.
Awesome. Yes, and I will definitely include those links. Well, all right, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you for giving us some of your time again. We appreciate you. If you like the show, give us thumbs up. If you didn't, give us thumbs down. Leave a comment. Tell us we suck. I don't care. Do something. Be interactive. you can find us everywhere, right? I mean, just look, you'll find us. We are hosted now by fountain.fm. If you'd like to, go check us out there, and, you know, feel free to support us if you feel we added value for you. And most importantly, wherever you are, whenever you're watching this, have an amazing day.
See you, everybody.
So long, and thanks
for all the fish.